streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they call me
home. Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have our guest, Ms. Carissa Harris, and Carissa has a story to tell tonight, and we're hoping that it'll touch many people out there. As a child, she suffered 12 years of physical and psychological abuse from her own mother, as well as sexual abuse from some of her mother's male acquaintances. After being finally rescued by the police and CPS, she spent 5 years in the foster care system in 14 different placements. Years later, Carissa was encouraged and felt called to represent Scottsdale in the Triumph Over Tragedy pageant because she wants to encourage everyone that they can triumph over any obstacle in life, no matter how big or how small. So tonight we're going to hear Carissa's story, so stay tuned. If you want to call in with comments or questions, you can call in at 347-826-7273. You can also listen online, and we do have our chat room open. So before we bring Carissa on, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Thanks, ladies and gentlemen. I'd just like to thank everybody for tuning in every Wednesday night. And like I always say, we like to give a big shout out to all our soldiers inside the walls and all our soldiers out here in the streets that's educating our youth. Without further ado, we'd like to pass the mic over to this great young lady here with a great message.
Carissa, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Carissa Harris. I am originally from Kingman, Arizona. I live now in Scottsdale with my husband of over 7 years and my 10-year-old son. I'm currently competing as a Mrs. Scottsdale Triumph Over Tragedy for the National Triumph Over Tragedy USA pageant. And, I have a website that says there's a story behind my smile because it takes a lot for me to smile every day with the past that I've, everything that I've dealt with in the past. So
that's
I don't know where you want to begin.
Wow. Let's go ahead and go back. You know, what's the first thing you can remember as a small child? And tell us a little bit about, your mom and your dad, where you grew up, and just kind of tell us a little bit about how the early years of your life were.
Well, I grew up in Kingman. My dad was not in the picture. I am half Native American. My tribe is located in Oklahoma. I'm half Cheyenne and Arapaho. My mom is very religious, so she raised me to be very religious, and she believed from the beginning a lot in Proverbs, you know, beat a child and he'll grow up, and she believed in that scripture a lot. And my first memory that really just kind of started the whole roller coaster of the 12 years of physical abuse was we were in church and I was sick with a cold and I couldn't stop crying because I didn't feel good. I just wanted to go home and crawl in the bed and just be sick. And my mom insisted that we stay in the church and I probably was about 3 or 4 years old. And she ended up taking me home, and that I remember was the first time that she thanked me and I didn't know what spanking was at that time. I just remember her hitting me, and I turned around, and I slapped her in the face, and she got this look in her eyes, like just this awful look in her eyes, like, you don't do that. And for probably the next 2 hours was spent literally beating me with whatever she could find. Her preference was either a belt, and when I was younger was a belt, and sticks from the trees that grew outside of our house. I learned never to hit her again. But that was my first memory, and it just, from that day on, any little thing that I did as I, you know, got older, whether it was, you know, sharpening a pencil wrong, looking at her the wrong way, I would be hit, I would be slammed up against the wall, I would be beat, and it became, as I got older, a routine. We lived about a half a block away from the train tracks up in Kingman, Arizona. And her routine would be turn on all the radios in the house and wait for the trains to pass by, because I would obviously scream as she beat me. And that's how she covered the cries of my screaming, and that's how, you know, people wondered, because they would see bruises, they would see, you know, makeup covered up, but it was always, my mom always passed it off as a, you know, she fell or something. A lot of people didn't really find out or know what was going on because I was homeschooled. So I was kept in a very secluded lifestyle. I was, you know, wasn't allowed to have any friends. Very, very few people came over to visit us. It was just day in and day out. There was not a day that went by that I did something that would trigger her to beat me in some fashion.
Well, she kind of just kept you away from everybody, secluded.
Yes. And so the religion.
How old were you at that first spanking that you had?
I was probably about 3 or 4.
Wow, that's young.
And it just continued as, you know, and as I got older, it got worse. It was hard.
So she homeschooled you then to keep you at home?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have any other brothers and sisters?
I have an older sister, but she was, she actually ran away from home when she was 14. She is actually a drug addict and a prostitute. And she's in her mid-40s now, so I never had a relationship with my sister.
Wow. That's too bad. Now, I want to just read an excerpt here from the CPS report, and this is after many years of abuse. It says, evidence of physical abuse was substantial and included bruises on both of Carissa's legs, both buttocks, and on her arms, and included puncture marks above her left knee where the mother struck her with a safety pin.
Uh-huh.
How does that make you feel just to hear that? It's got to be so hard.
It's hard, but at the same time, you know, as I got older, I honestly thought I would never live to see my 16th birthday, much less turn 18, because as I got older, as I got closer to my teens, it just seemed to get worse. When I was about 10 or 11, my mom believed because I had a typical child attitude. You know, I didn't like something she had said, and so I had got an attitude with her. And to her, that was the devil. The devil was inside me. And she actually took a butcher knife, pushed me up against the wall, and held the butcher knife to my throat and threatened to kill me.
Wow.
And that shook me up. And from that day on, I really started trying to mentally find a way out. And I knew, you know, I was raised to believe in God and believe that God has a purpose for us. But to me, it just seemed unfair that God would allow, you know, every day for me to be physically abused, you know, to have these scars on my body from my mom.
Right.
And I just, you know, kept trying to find ways out. And obviously one of the ways out as I got older was I was taught that suicide is a sin, but to me it seemed like it was the only way that I could get away from my mom that I knew, because I wasn't allowed to talk to anyone. I wasn't allowed to socialize with anyone. And so I believe I was 11. 11 was the first time I tried to overdose on medication. And I took a whole bottle of aspirin, you know, thinking it would do the job. It just made me really sick for several days.
Exactly.
And then there were many times when I just grabbed a knife and I would lay in my bed and say, God, why are you allowing me, why is this happening to me? Why aren't you stopping this? You know, and I just lay there so many nights just wanting to stab myself and just end it all and die.
Wow. Well, we're glad you didn't, because you have a powerful message and you're sharing it with so many people. And you know, God spared you. God had a special reason for you to be here, and that's why you're still here. And we're going to continue talking about that. But let's go back to the other part, is that some of your mother's male acquaintances have sexually abused you.
The first time I was actually the first time it ever happened to me was actually not one of my mother's male acquaintances. It was actually the principal of the preschool. My mom did allow me for a few months to go to like a pre-K program. And I remember It was called the Little Red Schoolhouse. And the principal, it was a two-story building. And this principal came out and he like got a group of girls together and he's like, do you guys want to go do something special with me, the principal? And I'm like, you know, I do, you know. And then I'm like, you know, I want my other friend, you know, a girlfriend that I had that I was really good friends with at the time. I was like, can she come with me? And he's like, oh, of course. And my first memory of that was, is he took us up, had us both disrobe, take a shower, and ended up touching us in places that obviously shouldn't be touched. And I didn't understand why, and I ended up, you know, just having the guilt and shame of, you know, why is this happening? You know, I was thinking maybe we were going to get some sort of treat or, you know, get to watch a movie or something, but I didn't understand why this guy was doing this to us, you know, at such a young age. And obviously I was scared to mention it to my mom. But I guess the other little girl told her parents, and her parents told my mom, and that whole situation, she took me out of the school, which prompted her to homeschool me, which is one of the reasons why she homeschooled me, was because she didn't trust the school environment. So that was the first incident. And then my mom was a very caring person. You know, she always wanted, she believed it was God's will for her to help other people. And so if we met, like, this homeless man on the street, she would try to help them, or this stranger, this, you know, these male strangers. And on a couple of occasions, there were two separate years apart where they came home with us and befriended us and became really close with my mom. And my mom thought that they were okay people. They treated me nice. They brought us gifts. They helped us out financially. But, you know, ultimately they ended up touching me in places that shouldn't have been touched.
Right. And just that alone is you know, another reason why a lot of kids want to commit suicide, and a lot of teenagers nowadays are going through the stresses of depression and suicidal feelings and ideations, and you know, and nobody really understands what, you know, they say, why do they do that? You know, and sometimes there's a lot of reasons underneath that nobody knows, and sexual abuse and physical abuse are two of them.
Yeah. It was all very, you know, different to me. And you know, the last incident that happened, my mom, you know, we testified. I had to go and testify with the local county attorney and tell him what happened. And it just, you know, he was actually locked up for a while. And it just, you know, I wondered, you know, it always felt like I was the one that did something wrong, you know, that it was my fault.
Right. And it wasn't your fault. You were just a child.
Right.
You know, and if, I mean, if you're the one that told on your mom, well, that's too bad for your mom. But she was doing wrong. She was hurting you. She was allowing other people to hurt you.
Right.
Tell us about the day that a neighbor helped and you guys were able to get police and they were able to get your mom into custody.
It actually took about a month. My neighbors had their daughter move in and their son, and I was about 12. And I kind of had a crush on their son, and so I would make excuses to sneak out and talk to him. And his mom, I would sneak over, and his mom would let me come watch Xena, the Warrior Princess, because my mom, TV was not allowed in our house, and I had fallen in love with the show because I got to watch TV at the neighbor's house. You know, I would sneak out when my mom had fallen asleep. And one day I asked, I wrote a letter, and I asked the son to give it to his mom. And I came out, and I had welts and bruises from my mom beating me. And I asked her, you know, I was 12 at the time, and I asked her, you know, is this normal? I mean, I feel like I'm going to die. And she does this to me every day, and I have these scars, and I showed her everything. And she's like, no, sweetie, this is not normal. You shouldn't be going through this. And she actually worked for a branch in CPS at the time. And she's like, there'll be an investigation. We're going to have to provide proof. And so it took about a month. I was like, what can I do? Because if I go with you guys and I don't, and I get returned back to my mom, I know she's going to kill me for turning her in. I want to make sure that I will never, ever go back in her care again. And they said, if you can get, you know, you have the bruises, you have the scars, but if you can get any type of video or any type of, you know, audio evidence. And my mom used to tape record her sermons and tape record off of the radio sermons, and she would listen to them over and over again. So I knew how to tape record. And so when I knew that she was going to beat me, you know, because she would tell me, as soon as the next train comes by, you need to take off all your clothes, you're going to get a spanking, and you need to turn all the radios up really loud so the neighbors don't hear you. And so I had to prep for my own beating. And when she did that, I put in a blank tape and I pressed record. And so you could hear her yelling at me, beating me, telling me that I'm a child of Satan, that I'm no good, that I'm evil, and that's why she's beating me. And I got it tape recorded and I turned it in to my neighbor. And the day that it all kind of came down is I noticed my mom had gone to the grocery store and had, I noticed a cop go next door to my neighbor's. And I kind of flagged him down, and he came over to me, and he's like, it's going to be okay. We're going to get you out of there. And I was just, at that point, I was nervous because I didn't know when it was going to happen. I didn't know if my mom was going to try to hurt me even more or kill me when she found out what was going on. She came back, and I remember, and it was later in the afternoon, and I remember looking out the window and seeing, like, three police cars pull up, two more police cars pull up, and three more police cars pull up, and a plain marked car pull up all in front of our house. And my mom's looking at me like, what's going on? And I looked at her, and I said, Mom, I'm sorry. And I started walking out the front door. And I didn't look back until I was out to the fence, out to our front yard. And the police arrested her, and she actually showed them the pieces, the boards and the belts. She gave them the boards and the belts that she had been using to beat me. And I just remember looking at the social worker and saying, she's actually confessing to what she did to me. And it was just seeing all those police cars pull up, it was just, I knew that my life was never going to be the same and that I was saved.
Wow. And your mother, they ended up charging her with two class felonies, or how did that happen? What happened?
Oh, I don't remember. I don't remember what they charged her with. I know she spent, I believe, like a year and a half in jail. For the rest of her life, she's no longer allowed to be around anyone under the age of 18 alone. She's supposed to be on medication because they actually diagnosed her as a paranoid schizophrenic, which is why she acted the way she acted. I mean, there's a lot more to her behavior with the way she dealt with me and our neighbors and everything. But, yeah, it definitely, I didn't have to go back to her.
Now, I thought I read somewhere that when you were very small, maybe 1 or 2 years old, they actually took you away from your mother for a period of time because of the mental health problems. So why would they allow you to go back and forth so much if they knew she was having trouble?
You know, I don't know. I know she spent, and I don't know if it was when I was, I know she spent time in the Arizona State Hospital down here in Phoenix, and I don't know if that was the time that they took me away. I was very young. I remember staying with this foster home that had this really big swimming pool, and I was excited to be get in the swimming pool and try to swim, and also the fact that I got to watch PBS in Sesame Street. And I don't remember why, you know, obviously somehow she got a lawyer and she got me back, and then that's when everything kind of started to transpire as far as the continuous abuse.
Wow. That's just a hard story all the way around. And then all of the things that it's caused you to go through in your life, you know, dealing with the sexual abuse and the physical abuse and the suicide attempt, and I believe you had some eating disorders or some bulimia at one point. Depression.
It's foster care. It was
right.
The years I've been in foster care. It's, you know, I'm very grateful to the Arizona foster care system because it was a better placement than what I was obviously in. But at the same time, you know, like I say on my website, I was in about 14 different placements. One of the placements did abuse me, and I had to run away from that home. There were probably out of the 14, there were, I believe, three really good placements that really made an impact on me as a person and really supported me as a person and told me not to become a statistic, to make something of my life, to become, don't let the past, you know, rule my future.
Right.
Make your own future. And so it's, you know, trying to fit in, because the biggest thing for me was I had never socialized with other children my age. So trying to fit in to high school was very hard, which is where kind of the eating disorder came in, because the kids would always call me too fat. So I started throwing up, eating my food and throwing up because I would think I was skinny. And of course my foster parents found that out and put me in a facility. And that was down here in Phoenix when that happened. And I got over that. And I just realized, you know, how the path that I had just started on, how detrimental it could have been for me. And so I'm grateful. I hated them at the time for putting me, you know, taking me away from my friends at school and taking me away from the school environment and putting me in a group home to control my eating disorder. But at the same time, you know, it was the right decision to make at the time.
Right. Krista, we're going to take a call here. We have a caller here. And then after that, we are going to play one of the songs that that you requested, and let's go ahead and take this call first.
Okay.
The caller with the last four digits, 6043. Caller, you're on the air. Caller, are you there? All right, maybe they're just listening in. We'll try to get back with them in a little bit. We're going to play this song, One Way Ticket. Tell us a little bit about this song, because you told me that it meant a lot to you at one time.
It was, I would listen to the radio after my mom went to sleep. And it was probably January, February. The middle of February is when I got taken away from my mom, and I heard this song, and it was really, to me, it's exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to just find a one-way ticket out of the environment that I was in, and and start over and do what I wanted to do with my life.
Okay. Well, we're going to play this song for you, and then we will be right back.
Okay.
Here to the hottest show worldwide, the Streets and Love You Back radio show. And we're kicking it tonight with a young lady that's telling her powerful message and powerful story, and hoping it lands on ears of people who need to hear this message as well. So we're right back, and we want to finish telling her story and enlighten people on your message. And that song was a great song that you wanted to hear.
Thank you.
So, are you doing okay?
Yes.
Does that bring back a lot of memories?
It does. It's definitely, you know, it's been a while since I've, you know, really thought back to everything that's happened in my life and, you know, realized, you know, I know I've come a long way. I've overcome a lot of things, and my goal now in life is to inspire you know, other people. I know there's people who have been through a lot worse than I have been, but no matter what you've been through, it's you can get through it. I got through it, and, you know, I didn't turn to drugs. I didn't become an alcoholic. I didn't become a statistic, which is when I first got into foster care, one of the things they told me is, you don't have a very good chance of becoming something. You will probably become a statistic. And I fought really hard to not become a statistic, one of the foster care children's statistics in life.
Right. And you had to battle a lot of things to overcome that, too. You talked on your website a little bit about the depression that you went through, the post-traumatic stress, almost having a nervous breakdown just because of reliving and going through all the things that you had gone through at some point. So, you know, talk a little bit about how you got through that and maybe, you know, other people can hear a little bit about what you can do to overcome that. And those feelings.
It's, you know, it's for me, depression and the PTSD. I used to have, with the PTSD, I used to have really bad flashbacks of what my mom did to me. I used to have nightmares, and it took a lot of counseling and medication to help me, you know, get through it. And a lot of it was because I hadn't chosen to let go. I couldn't understand why it had happened to me, why my mom had chosen to treat me the way she did. And, you know, in a way now I kind of understand, because that's just the way her mindset was as a paranoid schizophrenic, and what she believed she was truly doing the right thing. And that's not going to change. But I had to really sit down and, you know, let my mom know, basically, I didn't like what you did to me. I had to write her, I wrote her a letter, you know, I broke down and wrote her a letter, and I said, what you did to me was wrong. But you know what? I forgive you. I forgive you for what you did. And that was, it took me, let's see, that was about, I did that about in 2006. And so it took me, you know, a long time for me to be able to get to that point to forgive her for what she did. Will I forget what she did? No. But to actually forgive her, you know, I had to let her know that I forgive her and move on and take what happened to me and use it to inspire other people who've been in similar situations. You know, it's the PTSD. There are still moments, you know, where I have flashbacks. And it's just, you know, it's like the soldiers coming home from a war zone. You know, it's the rest of your life. You're going to have those moments, and you've just got to realize and accept, you know, you're going to have those moments, but it's okay. It's not going to happen again. It's over. It's done with. You're in a better position now, and you're blessed. You're in a blessed position. You know, I have a wonderful family, you know, a wonderful job, friends. And you just got to look at the positive when you have those flashbacks. And as far as the depression, you know, it is for me, it is a daily battle. It is sometimes very hard to get out of bed some days. But I do it because, you know, I've got a family to support. I've got people who believe in me. And it's not going to do you personally as a person any good to just sit in bed and let the world pass you by when there is so much in life that you can do. Right. And, you know, for yourself and for others.
So what advice do you have for the youth that are in the foster system or, you know, going through abuse? What advice could you give them?
The same thing that was that was, you know, pretty much given to me is don't become a statistic. Work hard. Find something positive that you're good at and focus on that. You are the biggest, I don't know how to say this, your life is in your hands. It's not in anyone else's hands. And you can make the choice to go down the path of drugs, alcohol, jail, or you can make the choice to not become a statistic and to go through life and make a positive impact for other people. And it's hard. You're going to be tempted. You know, there were a lot of times when I was tempted to make the wrong decisions, but it's, you know, in the back of my mind, I always said, you know, I want to become better. You want to break the cycle. Break the cycle of what you grew up with. Become a better person than what your family was or what you experienced.
Right, Go ahead, young lady.
Pardon me?
Oh, go ahead and finish.
I didn't hear what you said. So that's kind of my advice is, you know, just stop the cycle and be a positive change for yourself and the world around you.
Right. That sounds great. And, with the cycle being broke, you know, and you doing great things. If someone wanted to contact you, if they needed to speak to you, would you give the people in the audience your email address or your Facebook page if they wanted to contact you or your website for any encouragement?
Absolutely. It's Krista. It's K-A-R-I-S-T-A Harris at yahoo.com.
All right, and give your website out as well.
It's Krista, and it's K-A-R-I-S-T-A at webstarts.com.
All right, that sounds like a winner. And do you have anything going on in your pageants or anything still?
I compete for the national title of Mrs. Triumph Over Tragedy USA. July 27th. Pardon me?
I say that's great. Put that out there for the viewers to know.
Thank you.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about some of the good things that, you know, we know that you've got over this and that, you know, each day is a struggle, but you're doing something positive. You've turned your life around, and like you said, you didn't want to be one of those statistics. So you made a change. And tell us a little bit about the change that you made and what you're doing in your life now. I know that you're volunteering for a lot of different organizations and foundations, and then tell us how you got into the pageants.
I got into the pageants back when I was 18, just out of foster care. I'm really passionate about bringing awareness to the foster kids in Arizona, because the foster kids in Arizona, as a foster kid, you are given so little, you know, it is so hard to find good foster parents, you know, that will really support you. You know, a lot of the people are just, you know, you hear that they just take them in because of the money. And a lot of, you know, a lot of the foster parents, that is true. It is very rare, you know, maybe one in every five foster parents are actually in it because they care for the kids. And so it's, you know, advocating for foster kids, you know, that, yeah, you're in foster care. You may not get the best attention. You may not get a lot of financial support, but that doesn't matter. You know what? There are people that do believe in you. There are people that have been, you know, like myself, you know, I spent four or five years in foster care and I came out okay. You know, I have struggles. You're going to have struggles. But you know what? It doesn't mean that you know, just because you're in foster care that you need to go down the road of, you know, going in and out of jail or doing drugs or becoming an alcoholic or becoming homeless. You can be your own person of change. And it's just, so that's, when I was 18, I wanted to get that message across. And so I kind of got into pageants at 18 through the Miss America system in their preliminaries. And then I got married and, well, got pregnant, got married. I actually ended up with that first marriage. I experienced spousal abuse, which is one of the classic cases of, you know, you don't know what they really are until you get married to them. I got out of that situation, and I just, you know, realized, you know, I had a son to take care of. I went to college. I worked, you know, 40, 60 hours a week, took care of my son, graduated college, I've worked in the healthcare industry for, let's see, almost 10, 11 years on and off. And then I met my husband, oddly enough, through online dating, and he has literally become my rock. He's just all around an amazing person. You know, he gets, you know, my bad days, my good days. He's just been there for me. And then just through, before we got married, I competed in the United States system, the Arizona United States system. And I liked competing in pageants because of the friendships you make, the charities you get to volunteer for, and the fact that you get the chance to make a difference in so many different ways in other people's lives. And it's a whole, pageants open up a whole world of opportunity for you. And I kind of took a break, and then this year I got, I was highly encouraged to start competing and do this Triumph Over Tragedy pageant. Because of how close it was, you know, how it hit home for me. And so I'm, you know, I've already made some wonderful friends, some wonderful pageant sisters. I've already volunteered for some amazing programs, and I'm looking forward to volunteering for even more. Throughout the years, I've volunteered for I'm a big believer in supporting our local community. I've coached baseball. I've coached basketball. I volunteered for Phoenix Children's Hospital. I helped them out with events for the last 9 years. I served on the Arizona Foster Care Review Board, which that was very near and dear to my heart.
Right.
And then, you know, volunteer for, you know, a lot of organizations that deal with child abuse.
Now, you volunteer or you work with the Tanya Allen Foundation?
I volunteered for the Tanya Allen Foundation, and me and my husband are a big supporter. whatever events that they try to put on, we try to volunteer in whatever capacity that we can.
And at one time, you even helped clear out as far as the Casa Grande for their Toys for Tots event.
Oh, that was a wonderful. That I love that. That was a wonderful. That was back in 2004, I believe, or 2004, and that was just the people out there are amazing, and you know, bringing the toys, and we did a raffle to raise funds, and we had a couple of truckloads full of toys, and we even did a parade out there for the Toys for Tots, and it was just a wonderful. It was one of my favorite events.
All right. Well, I am going to try to see if this caller is just listening in or if they have a comment for us. So let's try this one more time. And I'm going to try to get the call with the last four digits, 5740. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
All right. Do you have a question or comment for the guest tonight?
No, I'm just barely tuned in. I'm actually Lonel Basie. I'm just tuning in right now. And it just seems kind of like a childhood. It was kind of rough. And I can't picture my kids going through that. And I do want to apologize for that, even though I can't do anything. But I just really feel sorry. Like I'm kind of glad you did change your life around. I'm glad you're doing positive things now and helping out the community and helping charities, which is a good thing. So I just hope that things don't happen like that around my area, because if I seen something like that, I don't know what I would do if I seen that with my own eyes, with an adult doing that to a kid. So, because I have two daughters of my own, and I wouldn't feel comfortable with that happening to my two daughters. So I just really opened up my eyes to kind of pay more attention with the daycares, after-school programs, teachers, whatever. But, I just really feel that you did have a real tough childhood. And I wanted to apologize even though I wasn't there or anything, but I just feel that, like, you are turning your life around, which is good, and just keep moving forward and keep doing your thing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Paul, for calling in. We appreciate your support.
All right.
Stay on the line and listen to the rest of the show. All right. We are going to go to another song that you liked before we finish out and listen to that, and that's called Heaven in the Real World by Stephen Curtis Chapman. Tell us a little bit about this song and why you feel so good about this song.
Stephen Curtis Chapman and Michael W. Smith and Amy Grant were all inspirational. They helped me. Their songs helped me. You know, each day, at the end of the day, I would lay in bed listening to their music because it was the only, you know, music my mom would allow me to listen to. And it's just, you know, the lyrics kind of just sounded to me, and it was like, you know, this is the real world. There has to be some sort of heaven, and it was kind of my prayer to God, you know, is there heaven in the real world? Am I going to find, you know, my piece of heaven here in the real world? And I would listen to it over and over and over again and, you know, pray to God that something, some miracle would happen. And, you know, obviously did. It was still a rough road, but it was, you know, their music helped me, you know, make it through each day.
Right. Okay, well, we're going to listen to this song, and then we'll be right back afterwards.
Okay.
Looking through eyes of fear.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome right back to the hottest radio show worldwide, The Streets and Love You Back. And we're kicking it live tonight with a great guest and a great positive message. And that was a great, great song that she requested, and it was an honor for us to play it on the show tonight for her. So we're right back with the beauty pageant tonight, and she's doing great things. So we just want to give you your last words and you know, let the viewers know anything that you need them to know before we get off the air.
I guess the last thing I would just like to say is that, you know, whether you're a child, whether you're in foster care, whether you're an adult, whatever you're going through, you know, if it's hard for you to get out of bed and face each day, you can do it. You know, I do it every day, you know. If you're suffering from health problems, you know, I suffer from chronic health problems too. It's don't let life pass you by. You know, go out and seize what you can and enjoy life as much as you possibly can and try to help and try to inspire, you know, someone else in whatever possible way you can. You know, whether it's a kind word, an act of kindness, or just being there for them. You know, it may be hard for you to get out of bed and face the day, but do it. It will make you feel better in the long run. It'll make you feel like you've accomplished something. And then for those, you know, for the children, you know, if there's children out there listening in foster care being abused, you know, it's not your fault. And you know, take a stand for yourself and do what you can to get out of that situation, because there is something better down the road for you. It's your life is not meant to be a victim of abuse, and you know, also spousal abuse. You know, it's, you know, take a stand and get There's plenty of resources out there, and you can find a way to get away from it and become a better person and change your life around, you know, make your life better for yourself where you will be happy with yourself.
All right, Dan. So that was a great, great message right there, you know. So I'm going to say my last announcements and pass it to the missus to say hers. But we just want to encourage everybody tonight to go to the website and learn more about this young lady and learn more about what she's doing. And before I say my announcement, I would like for you to give your website out one more time.
It's Karista. It's Karista at webstarts.com.
All right. You heard that, ladies and gentlemen. So go start logging on to that website now and start learning about some good things that's going on. And we're about to let everybody know our announcements. Coming up June 14th and 15th, we got the Junior Golden Gloves that will be coming up, that the Finn family give every year. And that's my wife and her family. And we're going to be there June 14th and 15th. And that will be at the Arizona Event Center in Mesa, Arizona. So we're looking for everybody to come out and have a good time once again on June 14th and 15th. Also, if you have not got both of the books yet, the first title of the book is The Streets Don't Love You Back. The second book is Never Hit a Woman, about domestic violence. And we ask you to go to the website, www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. And there you will see all the things that we do. And also check out our online store as well. We have a lot of summer clothes now. We have all the way from adult clothes to toddler clothes. And in the next week or so, we'll be having our lady clothes coming out. So make sure you log on and learn more about that as well. So without further ado, I'll pass the mic over, and everybody have a blessed night. And I'll pass the mic to the missus.
All right. Well, we'd like to thank you, Karista, for coming on and sharing your story. And we're hoping that it touched somebody and will touch somebody and give them hope and encouragement and help them, you know, stop that cycle of pain and abuse and you know, make a change in their lives. So we really, really thank you so much for sharing your story. And I know it's not easy to talk about and you know, remember. So we definitely appreciate it and thank you and know that it's for a good cause and it will help somebody.
Well, I want to just say thank you to both Lucinda and Robert for, you know, giving me this wonderful opportunity to share my story, you know, with whoever's out there listening and, you know, hopefully inspire someone, you know, or hopefully a bunch of people. I really am honored and am really grateful to you guys for this wonderful opportunity, and thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, you're very welcome, young lady, and we appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
All right, we are going to do one more song for you that you didn't choose, but we're going to dedicate this song to you, and this is a song made by a friend of ours. He's a West Coast hip-hop rap artist, but he grew up also being abandoned by his parents, and his parents were into drugs and different things, and so he was homeless on the street. And for many years, and at one point as a young adult, he tried to commit suicide with a gun, but he didn't die. And so he thought he was even a failure after that because he couldn't even do that right. But he ended up making that change and changing his life, and he's doing great things now, and he's educating kids about suicide prevention and different things. So he wrote this song, and it's called Never Give Up. And we're going to dedicate this song to you tonight as we go out and enjoy it. And, you know, we're hoping to be able to meet you one of these days and get together with you and just sit down and talk. So keep in touch with us. And once again, thank you so much for your testimony.
No problem. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. The beginning of this song here starts out, he's on the basketball court talking to a couple of younger boys.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Enjoy the song and have a great night. Remember, the streets don't love you back. And join us every Wednesday night, 8:30 Pacific time, 11:30 Eastern. And here we go.
Thank you.
The homies, what's good with y'all?
What's up with y'all, huh? What's good?
Can't make no shot, man.
Can't make no shots. I mean, you know, can't give up, though. You got to keep trying, you know. Practice makes perfect. You know, that's for all y'all. You know what I mean? Just, you know, stay focused. Don't give up. You know, never give up. No matter what it is in life, you can't give up on anything. That's real. You know what I mean? So just keep your shot going. All y'all, you know.
Okay.
I look forward to coming to the game one day. NBA, man. I'm trying to see y'all there.
Yeah.
All right? Okay, loved ones. Y'all be good, all right? I just came to check on y'all.
That's all right.
But a drink.
Never give up.
Never
give up.